This is BBC Radio 3, and the time is now 11 o'clock. Time to visit the Edinburgh Festival for the first of three live Late Junction programmes. So from the Blue Tent at the BBC's own venue at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, here's Verity Sharp.
Very blue here indeed. Thanks, Ian. In fact, people are sporting blue scarves. More about that later. Welcome to Edinburgh. The city, as you can imagine at this time of year, is literally teeming with performers. You can't go more than 10 paces along a street before bumping into a juggler or a busker or a street artist. And the creative spirit here is almost palpable. The BBC has its own fringe venue. This month, there's been a whole host of comedy and theatre here. And tonight, of course, we've got a whole variety of music. The audience are gathered beneath a beautiful canopy of twinkling fairy lights. And we have three groups of musicians on stage waiting to deliver a magical evening of music for this special edition of Late Junction. All the way from Belgium and fresh from their concerts for the main Edinburgh International Festival, we have the world-renowned viol ensemble, the Richikar Ensemble. And then over on the far side of the stage, we have three consummate musicians sitting in a row. Chris Drever is in the middle, Eamon Cohen on the banjo on the far right, and then Megan Henderson. And they are the Chris Drever Trio. And then lining the back of the stage, dressed in the rich colours of the traditional Mongolian dress, we have the six players of Anda Union. And true to Late Junction style, we like to mix things up on this programme, as I'm sure you all know. So we're going to start by hearing all three groups playing back to back. And to start us off, we have a song called Delcha from Anda Union.
Yeah. Thank you. where the sun shines down from his heavenly throne. All the people lying on the ground like lizards on a stone. Thank God for sunny weather. It's only once a year. The cold and wind, they break them. The winter brings their tears. God put me here in this field full of snow. The dark sky above me, the hard earth below. It always feels cold, it's always the same. I made my choices, so I'll shoulder the blame. I'm standing in this field. The sun beats down so bold. And even though it's real, I know that it's not gold. I've no reason to complain. The season always takes me to when I first felt low. The season always makes me. Oh God, put me here in this field. The dark sky above me and the hard earth below. It always feels cold, it's always the same. I made my choices, so I'll shoulder. The sounds on my window, they brighten the gloom. It's never so still as when rain's falling down. The silence and darkness steal old souls' cry.
Wonderful stuff there from the Chris Drever Trio, preceded by a preludium by William Byrd, as played by the Richcar Ensemble, the Richcar Consort. And then first tonight we heard the thundering music of Mongolia, as played by Ander Union. We're going to hear much more from these three bands as the night proceeds. And if you're not fortunate enough to be with us in the audience here in Edinburgh, you can look at Twitter. We'll be tweeting photos and snapshots from behind the scenes on Twitter at BBC Radio 3. This is Late Junction with me, Verity Sharp, coming live from the Edinburgh Festival. Edinburgh is, of course, a richly cosmopolitan city. It buzzes with life and industry. But it looks to the future, but it all the time holds on very tight to its traditions, and that is surely what gives it a very strong identity. Folk music and dance have long been treasured here, but now another strand of the tradition has recently found refuge within the city walls, and that is the art of storytelling. So when I arrived yesterday in glorious sunshine, I headed straight into town to find out more about the Scottish Storytelling Centre. Well, I'm now out walking down the Royal Mile in Edinburgh, the famous Royal Mile, and I've come out to explore a wonderfully rich tradition in Scotland, and the tradition is that of storytelling. And about halfway down the Royal Mile, halfway in fact between Edinburgh Castle and Holyrood Palace, is a glorious building which was once home to the Protestant reformer John Knox. So this is a medieval building. And it's now also, in a wonderful twist of fate, home also to the Scottish Storytelling Centre. This has become one of the key venues for the Edinburgh Festival this year. The director is Donald Smith, and he's going to tell me a bit more about it.
We're right beside the original medieval city gate, described by Scots as the port, confusingly. And we have the medieval houses that were by the gate, but they are combined with a completely new build designed by our contemporary architect, Malcolm Fraser, to create this blend of the contemporary and the historic in the very heart of Edinburgh's old town.
And when you say contemporary, the Storytelling Centre opened, was it 6 years ago now?
2006, we opened with all our lovely new interactive spaces, all celebrating different aspects of the art of live storytelling today.
Am I right in thinking this is the one and only storytelling centre in Great Britain, if not the world? Is that?
Well, I think we're the first purpose-built, except you have to acknowledge that tents, campfires, huts all over the world have had this function, so I think we have to be quite humble here. But what is also fascinating is that many other groups and countries and regions have come to visit us here because they have an intention of creating something around the narrative arts, but different in their own situation, in their own way.
My name's James Spence. I'm a storyteller. I've lived in Edinburgh for about 30 years, but I originally grew up in Jedburgh, down in the Borders, but the locals still call it Jethert, before it was made a royal borough.
Hello, my name is Fiona Herbert. I'm a storyteller. I live in Edinburgh.
First story I'm going to tell you is The Stag and the Wish, and I'm not really sure what to tell you about it, only that it was told to me by B. Ferguson. Once upon a time, there was this young farmer, and he didn't have his troubles to seek. You see, the crop had failed the previous year, and the buildings were in need of a bit of repair as well. Unfortunately, there wasn't the money to sort it out.
What's wonderful about storytelling is it's something we all used to do, and it's something we were all born to do, I think. Whether you're an adult or a child, we all need stories. And I love the way that you can connect with anyone from any background, any age, through the power of a well-told tale.
He was getting mair and mair ill-natured all the time. Well, yin day, he was just fair sick, so he decided.
It's the simplest of resources, and only comes alive if there's a genuine sharing of imagination, sharing of experience, sharing of feeling. But you know, actually that whole thing, it's an extraordinarily complex set of abilities.
Up the hill, And just as he got to the brow of the hill, there at the edge of the woods was this magnificent white stag. Oh, it must have been about 9 feet.
The Scottish Storytelling Centre is one of the key venues of the Fringe Festival. And this week hosts the Horse and Bamboo Theatre's telling of the remarkable story of Angus McPhee. He was born and raised in South Uist, but returned from a brief spell serving in the Second World War, suffering with mental health problems. He was hospitalised and given rudimentary treatments of the time, such as electric shock therapy. But what ultimately saved him was his fascination with weaving clothes, particularly hats, from grass. It was a skill he'd learnt in his childhood days. Horse and Bamboo's production is transporting. It draws you into the tale using very few words. Most of the words that are spoken are in Gaelic, but mixing those with mime, puppets and music.
People connect in so many different ways with the play, with the story. And whether it's that they're really keen weavers or they know people with mental conditions, so there's that connection. I think what's fantastic about the piece is that it shouldn't really matter whether you have Gaelic or not. Any language that you don't understand, I think, has probably a tendency to be a little bit more emotional to you because you're listening to it in a different way as well. Mm. So hopefully that will add to the show for those who are unfortunate and can't speak Gaelic.
The voice there of Mari Morrison, just one member of the Horse and Bamboo Theatre, and they're telling the truly moving story of Angus McPhee at the Scottish Storytelling Centre each afternoon. This week at 4 o'clock, I saw it this afternoon, and I have to say it is an immensely compelling performance, makes very clever use of puppetry and mime and song, of course, and weaves a lovely path through this story of this very troubled mind. It's called Angus, Weaver of Grass, and it is, as I say, very highly recommended. Well, here on stage at the BBC Fringe venue on Potter Row is the Reachcar Ensemble, 5 viols of various sizes, played by 5 leading players, who've brought to the Edinburgh Festival this year some of the glorious music of the English tradition. So tonight we're going to hear music by John Dowland and first by Christopher Tye. piece called Laud's Deo by Christopher Tyas, played by the Richard Carr consort, as led by Philippe Piello. Welcome, Philippe. It's such a almost mournful sound, isn't it, the sound of a viol consort?
Yes, the viol consort and the sound of the viol in itself is very often associated to death. So it's of course, a very intimate instrument. Was also often compared to the human voice. Yeah. And it was the instrument that was supposed to reflect at the best the human emotions.
Yeah. Does it ever play cheerful music? Was it ever music for dancing?
Sometimes, yes. I think we will finish the program with a more cheerful piece. Yes.
What is the meaning of ricercare?
Ricercare means in Italian research. And actually it's the name of a musical form. A sort of fugue, and it was very common in the early 17th century, or even 16th century, and we chose the name because when we launched the ensemble, our aim was to discover new repertoire, and to record this repertoire and make it more widely known to music lovers.
Because the viol consort had a kind of, not well, a relatively brief sort of golden period, didn't it, really?
Yes.
But I mean, obviously people like you keeping it alive today, but are people writing for it still? And
yes, there is, of course, since, let's say, mid of 20th century, a very important revival of the instrument. And of course, nowadays, composers still write for this kind of ensemble.
The instruments here, I mean, they look beautiful. I mean, they're stunning. Are they old instruments themselves?
In majority, they are copies, except one instrument, which
this is
a very special instrument. It's actually an English instrument, a very early one from 1621. But the special thing is that it was very appreciated in France in late 17th century, and great virtuoso like Marat Marais and Fauqueray liked very much English instrument. And at that time, an English instrument had maybe 10 times more value than a modern, very good French instrument. And that's why they rebuilt the English instruments in the, let's say, the French style. So, as you maybe know, Monsieur de Saint-Colombe added a seventh string to the bass viol, and so the French luthier did also add a seventh string to the very more ancient English instruments.
And there is obviously that rich tradition of French music, but here you are at the Edinburgh Festival exploring the English tradition, which we're very pleased about. We just heard from Christopher Tye. We're going back in time now to the music of John Dowland. What's the next
Not
piece?
Not really back in time.
Oh, no?
Rather the contrary. No.
Forward in time.
We're forward in time, okay. Yes. Because so Christopher Tye was one of the earliest composers to write music for this kind of ensemble. It was active in the mid-16th century, and John Dowland composed the famous Lacrimae, or Seven Tears, very passionate music, in the early 16th.
Okay, let's hear some more. This is the Ricercare Ensemble.
Thank you.
The King of Denmark's Galliard by John Dowland, as played by the Richard Carr Consorts. And they've given two impeccable concerts at the Edinburgh International Festival this year. And I think they're now going to pack up their vials and head to Spain, is that right, for a concert in Sarazara tomorrow. Doesn't sound like too bad a life, does it? Now, one thing that Scotland probably isn't short of is fiddle players. There are the revered elder statesmen, the young jaw-dropping virtuosos who seem to fly through all those jigs and reels. And then there are the more rounded fiddler-composer types who take time to delve into the music and find the truths that lie at this music's core. Duncan Chisholm fits into that last category. He's a fiddle player from Inverness. And for the last 6 years, he's been working on a trilogy of albums, which are his musical tribute to the particular Highland glens from where he can trace his family ancestry.
Looming over Glen Strathfarrar is a hill called Ben of Eichert. It looms large over the whole of the Inner Mariferth Basin, and that was my focus for the first album, Farrar, because I imagined a journey to the top of this. When you get to the top of Ben of Eichert, you can literally see for 100 miles. You can see the top of Ben Nevis on a clear day up there, and what I wanted to do was recreate in sound the journey to the top there and a quick descent to home. In Canich, the second album, it was an album basically looking at a journey through Glen Canich, and at the end of Glen Canich is a loch called Loch Millardach. It was dammed in 1949, I think, and the house that my father was born in was submerged in water, so it's sitting there under the water level beyond this dam. And for me, that's quite a strong symbol of the change within the Highlands when hydropower came in. My father actually worked on the dam itself, so it's a very dark and foreboding loch, and it always gives me a funny feeling when I go up to Loch Millardach and I know that the house is still there under the water. I spent a lot of the time imagining these things when I'm working in the studio at home. The process is that I work the album up into a point where it's got a running order and it's almost like a suite of music, but still in a very skeletal form. It's still solo fiddle with maybe a few lines here and there of harmony and counter melody lines and things like that. The real magic comes when we go into the studio, and I usually sit down and explain to the musicians that are involved exactly what I'm looking for to make it a coherent album, but also the individual parts and what they are supposed to represent. And that's where the real magic happens, because you start with this skeletal form and you try and impress on people the mood that you're going to create. And with the people that I use, my friends, my fellow musicians, we create this picture. We'll be right back. Throughout the three albums, I used the poem To Exiles by Neil Munro because I thought it was very evocative in its own way. It is very descriptive of the Highland Glens and also very descriptive of the fact that the Highland Glens are empty now. The three glens that are the focus of this trilogy, Strathfarrar, Glencannach and Glenafric, are all desolate and isolated places. They are beautiful places, but there are very, very few people live there, if any. I suppose it's telling a story that is quite sad in many respects. The clearances of the Chisholms happened very early on in terms of the Highland clearances. They happened in the late 18th century and went on until the mid-19th century. There was thousands and thousands of my fellow clansmen transported away to Nova Scotia in Canada, and there are very few Chisholms left. So the use of the poem To Exiles, spoken in Gaelic on all three recordings but translated on the titles, was very important for me to put in because it was very relevant to the whole story of the three glens.
That's the music of Duncan Chisholm. Afric is the last album of his Strathglass trilogy. It's due for release in September, and by a nice twist of fate, if you invest in all three of the albums in the trilogy, you can hear Chris Drever on the first one. That one is called Farah. Well, we are going to be hearing from Chris Drever and his trio later on tonight, but just having heard the glorious sound of the European viol a few moments ago, we're going to move on next to the Morinher, which must surely be a distant cousin somewhere along the line. This is the Mongolian horse head fiddle. There are at least five of them, I think, on stage that I was counting earlier. It's a two-stringed fiddle which they play by gripping it between the knees and bowing it, very much in a similar way to the viol. But unlike the members of the Richikar Ensemble, as far as I know anyway, these fantastic musicians that we have here tonight throat sing whilst playing. So the band's name is Andy Union. They play the exhilarating traditional music of Mongolia. And the first song is going to feature the voice of Chichi Goma, and it's a song called Altagana.
Hello, everyone. I am a Buryat. We are going to play Buryat song Altagana. My mother taught me this song when I was a little girl.
Thank you. Next song is Siruk Singin Hume.
Hello, everyone. Hello. My name is Urgun. I like to drink. How about you? Yes. Next song, Ortus drinking song.
We use the thunder, say, hey, Bowie.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, this is Andy Union live at the Edinburgh Festival. We're going to hear more from them in a moment. What a fantastic drinking song. Urgan, can I ask you, what is the drink of choice in Mongolia? Maybe vodka, I think.
Drinking.
Yes, I know. It's a good pastime. We're just going to be joined in a moment by, get out of the way, Andy Union's manager, and also he's been manipulating the sound at the back of the auditorium here, Tim Pierce. Tim, come over to the side of the stage. I know that you kind of came across this band, didn't you, when you were in Shanghai, is that right?
Yeah, 6 years ago I was at the Shanghai Festival, and there was a showcase at the very beginning, and we were listening to beautiful kind of classical Chinese music, and then this group of Mongolians, young Mongolians, came on the stage, and the whole place, our jaws just dropped, and I thought, this is it, I've got to work with these guys. Amazing.
Geographically, China and Mongolia sort of share land, do they? I mean, Inner Mongolia is northern.
Yeah, well, obviously the Mongols have been nomads in Central Asia. The Mongolians, they actually, you know, they moved around an awful lot. And today there are Mongolian communities in Mongolia, and then Inner Mongolia in China. There are 6 million Mongolians in China, and of course there are Buryats and Mongols in Buryatia in Russia as well. Yeah.
I was just asking Urgan about the drink of choice in Mongolia, because I was lucky enough to travel there a couple of years ago. And vodka, but also mare's milk.
Well, which mare's milk wine, yes.
Horses, they feature everywhere, don't they? I didn't actually taste too much of the mare's milk, but...
I've had plenty of it.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's a good batch.
It's very good, no hangover.
And I think, you know, this is why the horse is so revered, and as we're seeing with these wonderful Morinhe fiddles. So we're also, can I just quickly, because I know we're pushed for time a little bit, but also percussion instrument on the floor here. We seem to have a set of teeth.
Well, no, they're not teeth. They're actually 81, and exactly 81, because that's 9 times 9. 9's the holy number for the Mongolians, of their sheep bones. Actually, there are 2 specific heel bones on every sheep, so there are 42 sheep there. And a percussionist made that himself. It's called a shaga.
Great. Lovely stuff. As we said earlier, the audience are sporting blue scarves, which I think is a sign of good luck, isn't it?
Yes, it brings blue altogether is good luck. It's because their shaman god was the god of the sky, Tenga, and they became Buddhists. So the Tibetans have white scarves, they have blue scarves, and when you're a guest, you're welcomed with a blue scarf, and so we thought we would welcome the audience as our guests today.
Very nice. Thank you, Tim. I'll let you get back up.
Thank you.
So this is Late Junction live at the Edinburgh Festival. We're going to hear a little bit more from Andy Union, and I think they're going to play next a piece called Hometown.
Hello, everyone. My name is Urgan. I left the grassland when I was 13 to study music, and now live in the city. This song, Hometown, is about missing the grassland and my family. Thank you. Thank you.
멋지 못하고
So, thank you. Our last song, 10,000 Galloping Horses.
you.
Well, a fantastic standing ovation for the band and a union at the BBC's venue here, live at the Edinburgh Festival, and quite right too. It's a fantastic ending piece for their set called Galloping Horses. Their show for the Edinburgh Festival is called Wind Horse. You can catch it for the next couple of days if you haven't already at the Assembly at George Square. It starts at 3:30, and if you miss it, your last chance is going to be on Monday at the same time. This is Late Junction on BBC Radio 3. If you're listening at home, sadly far away from these shores, these programmes are available from the iPlayer, and they'll be available for the next 7 days. So do listen as many times as you like at your leisure. So we turn now to three wonderful musicians who have their feet firmly in the Scottish tradition. We have Chris Drever, singer and guitarist, banjo maestro Eamon Coyne, and the great fiddler Megan Henderson. I'm standing here now with Chris Drever. The Chris Drever Trio, in fact, isn't it, Chris? It's a new venture for you? Or?
Fairly new. I go out quite a lot as a duo with Eamon. We recorded a record 6 years ago or so. But I love the trio. I love the full sound. And we're lucky enough to have someone that can play loads of things really well, and Megan, so... kind of offers us a couple of different bands, really,
and a chance to explore some new material or dig out some old favourites.
Yeah, well, it's I get to play things that I didn't tour very much when I started doing solo things, because the trio Lau sort of appeared about the same time, but also to work up new material with that group as a base.
Okay, well, we look forward to hearing. What's the song you're going to start with tonight?
I'm going to start with a song called "The Call and the Answer."
Lovely. Take your seat. This is the Chris Drever Trio.
Hello, everyone. Let's be 1 second. Tune in here.
Are you settled after that lovely performance by the Mongolian band? Are you ready to get up and dance, maybe, I'd say? They were fantastic. I'm going to see them on Thursday. Definitely.
We might have wangled some tickets.
You could all come.
It's the call and the answer.
Thank you.
tomorrow. 2 hearts lost in space and time. You are the call, I am the answer. You are the wish and I am the way. You the music, I the dancer. You are the night and I am the day. You are the night and I am the day. You are the call, I am the answer. You are the wish and I am the way. You the music, I the dancer. You are the night and I am the day.
The moment of the night we've all been waiting for. Eamon has produced the banjo. We're going to play a type of tune and it has an accompanying dance. It's a sort of tune called a mazurka, popular in two countries mainly for obvious geographical reasons. They are Poland and Ireland. We're going to play that for you, and then we're going to play a kind of quick strathspey called a Highland, and we're going to finish up with a crooked reel called The Guns of the Magnificent Seven.
Check out Chris's guitar playing on the start of this. It's unbelievable.
No pressure. Thank you.
Well, a fantastic set of tunes there from the Chris Drever Trio, restoring the banjo to its rightful place of glory, surely.
Yes!
We're going to let Chris Drever, Eamon Coyne and Megan Henderson play us out tonight. Do join us for more from the Edinburgh Festival tomorrow night at the slightly later time of 11:45. Amongst our guests tomorrow, we're going to have King Creosote and also guitar heroes John Williams and John Etheridge. I'm Verity Sharp. This is Late Junction, live at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. My thanks to you here in the Blue Tent for being such a warm and appreciative audience tonight. And I shall leave you now in the capable hands of the Chris Drever Trio.
Are camps that they despise. Without us they would rot and die. Without the harvest gypsies. Oh, Brooks, we were farming men. I dream one day I will again. To miss the soil's a curious pain. And you're a harvest gypsy.
That was Chris Drever and his trio closing that special edition of Late Junction, broadcast from the Edinburgh Festival, introduced by Verity Sharp. And as Verity said, she'll be back tomorrow with another live programme, this time from the BBC's Edinburgh studios at the later time of 11:45. Performers including the Scottish singer-songwriter King Creosote. And that's here on BBC Radio 3, broadcasting between 90 and 93 FM and also on digital radio. It's 12:30. Now we join Jonathan Swain through the night.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome from me, Jonathan Swain. This is Through the Night here on BBC Radio 3, and to set us on our way tonight, what Mahler called a masterpiece, Engelbert Humperdinck's fairy tale opera Hansel and Gretel, in the Glyndebourne Festival production from the 2010 BBC Proms. The Intrepid Children are sung by Alice Coote and Lydia Teusche, with the Glyndebourne Festival Chorus and London Philharmonic conducted by Robin Ticciati. So off to that cottage at the edge of the forest, Hansel and Gretel are home alone, bored with their work and hungry. Gretel shows her brother a jug of milk a neighbour has brought them, a promise of rice pudding perhaps, but their dancing is interrupted by their mother, angry at how little work they've done. To make matters worse, she accidentally smashes the milk jug and then chases the children out into the woods to pick strawberries. Father arrives home and is worried they might stray into the area where the Nibble Witch lives, she who lures children to her cottage, cooks them, and then turns them into gingerbread. The Witch's Ride links Acts 1 and 2 and takes us deep into the forest, Hansel and Gretel initially gathering strawberries, but it's getting dark and they realise they're lost. The Sandman then appears, calms the anxious children, and after their evening prayer, they fall asleep and dream of angels descending a staircase of clouds and gathering protectively around them. And it's the theme of that evening prayer that opens the overture, one pretty much guaranteed to tug at the heartstrings marked childhood.
Suse, liebe Suse, was raschelt im Stroh? Die Gänse gehen an Fuß und haben kein Schuh. Der Schuster hat Fliegen, kein Leisten dazu. Drum kann er den Gänslein noch machen kein...
Wieso geht sie halt barfuß?
Schuh. Ist eine Not. Geschenkt mir eine Träne für Zucker und Brot. Verkauf ich mein Bettlein und leg mich aufs Stroh. Stich mich keine Feder und beiß mich kein. Ich
weiß nicht, der Hunger floh. Ach, kenn doch die Mutter, die wurde sich erkannt.
Thank you.
nun die Vollmacht, was die Griechen feiern.